Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is episode 31, Getting Out of the Doghouse.
And welcome back to Color Country Politics. I'm Jenny Hendricks.
I'm Jesse Harris.
And we are so thrilled today to have our fabulous guest, Chief Adams from the Cedar City Police Department.
Thank you.
We had him on last year, and we thought it was really important to have him back and kind of get an update and sort of what's happening in our community and sort of just keep his department top of mind and really hope that the community can understand, you know, sort of the function and what your people do and how they do it. And we've just been so impressed with your whole entire department. In fact, I didn't tell Chief I was going to tell this story, but my husband was pulled over and there was a trainee, and it was, he said, the most respectful and polite interaction, and he was just so impressed with the decorum and the demeanor of your people. So
was this recently?
Yeah, it was about a month and a half ago.
Wonderful.
But anyway, I was going to reach out and tell you that, and then I forgot. Now the whole entire community
knows
about it. So, you know, one of the things that I think is really relevant right now in our community, and I don't know if everybody knows this, but the new animal shelter is actually under your department.
That's correct.
So can you just kind of bring us up to speed and kind of tell us, you know, how we got here and why we got here?
Sure.
and sort of, you know, the ins and outs of what's happening there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So the current animal shelter, if there's any question at all with respect to its ability to sustain this operation, I would invite anybody to go down and take a look at that.
Yeah.
This has been put out for quite some time. This building was constructed well over 50 years ago.
Wow.
It was designed as a coal storage facility. So they bring the coal in back in the day, and there may still be some out there that exist, coal furnaces and things of that
sure,
nature.
Sure.
But they used it for that, and at some point the city took that and decided to convert that to an animal shelter. Years later, in fact, it's been probably close to 20 years ago, we then built a small office complex to the side mm-hmm. of that so that the staff had a place to interact, a clean place, a place that smelled better, to come in and conduct business. We've just simply outgrown it.
Yeah.
You know, we can't sustain. There are critics out there that talk about animals and what we should do with them.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a society, we love our pets, and sure. as a police department overseeing the animal shelter, we love pets, we love animals. We have animals that serve us in our canine program. And so it is high time. Chief Allenson, my predecessor, many, many years ago, I think probably close to 10 years ago, pitched this idea because
wow.
of the need.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it, plans were drawn up. And it was just one of those things that kept getting pushed to the back burner because
yeah.
we were mm-hmm. doing okay with Band-Aids and things
sure.
of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Tina Garrison, who's our shelter manager, she's been an assistant kennel staff for quite some time, and we just reclassed that position. So July 1st, she's the new shelter manager now, which is
okay.
fitting with the new shelter.
Good.
And she has done a great job really keeping our kennels clean.
Mm-hmm.
She's the reason, quite honestly, that we've achieved no-kill status in America.
I think
wow.
that's a really big deal.
Yeah.
I think that's something that really needs to be emphasized, is the fact that we have achieved a no-kill status.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
It's quite an accomplishment. And for our viewers and listeners, that doesn't mean that we don't abstain from euthanizing.
Yeah.
If we have animals that are hurt beyond
yeah.
the resuscitation,
yeah.
and it's the, you know, humane thing to do, or we sometimes get aggressive animals in there that we wouldn't dare adopt out
sure.
for safety reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we do have to euthanize a small percentage, but there is a, you know, a statistic, a limit that is there to achieve no kill, and we've done that now, I think, 2 years running.
That's amazing.
So our goal is, with the new shelter, is that's why we've named it the Cedar City Animal Adoption Shelter, is that we want that to be a hub of activity. We want people in and out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We want, you know, groups to come in and be educated, classroom field trips,
mm-hmm.
4-H groups, scouting groups,
sure.
so that those animals will move quickly. Tina, in achieving that no kill, has been working with Best Friends Animal Sanctuary, different rescue groups. Yes.
Yeah.
So we actually will take animals if we can get them adopted, and we'll sacrifice a little, and we'll drive to Nephi, we'll drive to Vegas, we'll have our kennel staff drive and meet people halfway to get these animals where they could be, so we're not having to put those animals down.
That's great.
So I guess my point is this, and I maybe hesitate a little bit, but I know there's been a lot of contention around the shelter and the need, but please believe me when I say it is so necessary. The dog kennels, there's no more dog kennels in the new shelter than there was in the old.
Okay.
We tried to keep it small. We tried to build a place that would allow for future growth, but would still not be so incredibly large that it was breaking the bank.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I get it, building costs are up. Yeah. Hence the reason we saw the $1.5 million price tag. But I guess the question would be, do we build one for $500,000 knowing in 5 to 8 years we have to spend that amount again or more to grow? So I believe that this will sustain us for decades to come, especially in our efforts to move those animals out quicker and not keep them there for a length of time.
And I didn't know this, I didn't know this until just recently, but you're statutorily obligated to have an animal shelter.
Yes.
This isn't necessarily something, this isn't a want classification. This is something that you have to have. And I didn't know that. So I thought that was an interesting, you know, sort of piece of that, that puzzle, is that this community is legally required to have an animal shelter. So
aside from the fact that, you know, we talk about ethics and the right thing to do, you know, and that's where our heart lies, certainly.
So one of the criticisms people throw out there is they say, well, why didn't you partner with Iron County, or why didn't you partner with ENAG? Why didn't we make one big facility that serves everyone in Iron County?
And that's a great question, Jesse. And again, this is where I wish we could bring people more into our world on the day-to-day operations that we engage in. We met with the county. We met with ENAG. I personally met with both organizations. And then the mayor, I, and the city manager met with them as well. And we, I mean, at least I felt like we were pleading, because it made sense, right? Mm-hmm. It made sense to find a location that was mutually beneficial for all, and then to actually put staff in there that could serve all jurisdictions. And they weren't interested. ENAG, and again, nothing against ENAG or the county. Mm-hmm. The county has a shelter out by the landfill. They felt like that was sufficient for their needs. ENAG was had already spent money building a water line out to their current animal shelter where it is now, and wanted a dog park, and so they were already kind of committed that way. So yeah, we I felt like we tried on multiple occasions to bring that to fruition, and it was met with resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, again, for legitimate reasons, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Once you've got some sunk costs in there, you're going to walk away from
it. Correct.
So are there animals that you can't, that we can't take at the city?
Well, historically, I guess, I mean, we have taken, we've taken non-domestic animals. We've had llamas in there before. We had a we had a pig there the other day that we couldn't find the owner for.
That's hilarious.
So we'll take about anything within reason. Now, if it's something that's more of a wild animal, we'll get, you know, fish and game DWR involved. But horses, we've taken those before. We will have krells in the back for the large domestic animals. But generally, it's your dogs and cats. And then again, if it's because we are animal control, and animal control and the animal shelter are kind of one entity, we control the animal population, and sometimes we bring animals in that don't necessarily belong, and we make do.
That's great.
Hopefully you found the owner of the llama.
Yes.
And the pig.
The pig we finally did, yes. It took a while.
That's great. Now, you had mentioned earlier that there's a canine component.
Yes.
And a canine officer component to this. How does that fit in?
Yeah, that's one part that we're excited about. So we have, I'm going to count, I think five. Highway Patrol has a canine that serves them. The Iron County Sheriff's Office has two dogs. We have two dogs. And DWR has a new dog. Josh Carver has a dog that's used for tracking of people, as well as finding cadavers of animals. So we have 5 to 6 dogs in the county. And with the new animal shelter, with the socialization area outside within the chain link, the goal is to have that so the dogs can have a place that's committed to train. So we're not using parks and church lawns like we do now, you know, consistently. But then in the back, we have four kennels that are specifically dedicated to boarding our police canines.
Oh.
So now the officers may leave them at home and have neighbor family check. They may take them to the hitching post or somewhere else to board. And this gives us more control to say, okay, don't worry about that. Plus it's, you know, it saves money.
Sure.
Where they can bring them in, have our shelter staff watch them, feed them while they're on vacation mm-hmm. with their family. And it just is a better peace of mind.
Sure. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I appreciate that update. That's great information. And I think, like you say, there has been a lot of contention surrounding this topic, and there's, you know, passion on both sides of it.
Of course.
So I appreciate you coming in and sort of just giving the facts.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, and grand opening this Saturday at 11.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The 24th
yes.
at 11 a.m. Grand opening, ribbon yes. cutting. That's going to be great.
Yeah, flag raising. And then awesome. Monday we'll be moved in and off we go.
Off you go. Excellent. That's great. That's great.
Sounds like a lot of work has been done to make sure that it was built to suit needs, not
yes.
any wants. And I mean, stretching 50 years out of a building that was never designed to house animals, that's quite a feat.
That's
I can't
impressive.
Imagine how much money was saved doing that for so long.
Well, and then it got to the point, especially the last 5 years, where we were dumping more money into it. And,
yeah.
and it wasn't, you know, hundreds of thousands, but it started to grow.
It adds up.
It's kind of like when you get a car that passes a certain age, you say it's cheaper to buy a new
that's
car.
That's right.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's pivot just a little bit.
Okay.
Because we wanted to talk about, you know, sort of 30,000 foot view of what's happening in your department. What does the community need to know? What are some issues, you know, that you're dealing with?
And, sure.
And again, what do we need to know about what you're doing?
No, that's great. So I'll talk a little bit in a minute maybe about the statistics just so people know where we're at and what they can do to help us protect the city.
Perfect.
But we've got three new officers that we've hired. We had two retirements this year and another officer leave for another jurisdiction. And so that seems to be kind of the common thread anymore in law enforcement, because agencies are finding it very difficult to recruit and retain mm-hmm. qualified officers. So most agencies that you go to, you will find a very young workforce,
right.
and we're no different. Our patrol division, I think, when you look at experience from our veteran sergeants down to our newest officer, of which we have three, it's about 6 years of experience.
Oh, wow.
Which is good for the basic officer. Most officers will tell you it takes about 5 years to really understand. Now, what we do with new officers, as we've done with these three, is they spend 12 weeks in the police academy,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then they come back and spend 14 weeks in FTO, that's field training officer.
Okay.
So they know what we do here. They learn, you know, our specific rules and ordinances and how we execute our duties. So that's, you know, that's weeks and weeks of training.
Yeah.
But then they'll tell you when they get out on their own, they're still, you know, that first call they go to by themselves, it's scary.
I imagine, yeah.
So most, yeah. the average is 5 years where they feel like, okay, I'm settled. I really think I can handle anything without any problem, and I'm on my way. And so when you think about the average, the years of experience being 6 years with that entire, you know, 24-member patrol division, it's concerning, especially when we have major incidents and we're looking for experience, which sometimes makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying, and we appreciate so much the city recognizing that this past year and,
yeah.
and giving us a wage increase citywide that really, I think, shows how they value our employees and they want to retain our employees mm-hmm. to really contribute to the city, because we have a remarkable group of employees
absolutely.
Citywide.
Retention is so much less expensive than recruiting.
Absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely. So we're excited about that. We are seeing, and we go, I guess, we try to do 6 month views, and that's what I have in front of me. These are our data numbers that we have. Targeted enforcement is important to me. It's important to our officers, and what that means is when we pull this data up and we find out where the crime is occurring, then those officers know where they should spend their time.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some officers now that are doing a remarkable job of addressing our drug problem,
okay.
which is on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
It's always an issue. And so they go to these neighborhoods and they address the issue. And we've actually seen transformations in the last year of neighborhoods where you would go down and see people exchanging drugs if you knew what you were looking for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Neighborhoods where we've had serious crimes occur. And that doesn't happen anymore because these people have left. They've
wow.
fled the area. So we're trying to transform neighborhoods in that way. So drugs is still a major issue that we're addressing.
Do you see any one kind of float to the top? I know we've talked about opioids before. Mm-hmm. Is that still an issue?
It is.
There something else that you're dealing with a lot?
Meth and heroin and marijuana are the top three. Okay. And meth is still strong. We see a lot of distributing of that. But we're seeing heroin as well as pills, kind of bump up against that. And it ebbs and flows as well. So that's always an issue. You know, we have our drug task force that addresses that full time, and then we have officers that's a passion of theirs, and they hit it every day, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
Theft is a big one, and that really is a crime of opportunity, particularly what we call a vehicle burglary.
Uh-huh.
Somebody breaks into your car and steals your laptop or your gun or your wallet. And I don't know how, you know, we get the message across. We've tried several different things. In fact, on our Facebook page, we've started the 9 p.m. routine.
I've seen that.
Which is just
like
a reminder.
I like that, yeah. Tell us a little bit about what that is.
So we stole that actually from Mesquite Police Department. They're very active in their social media.
Uh-huh.
And basically what it is just a reminder for people when they see that, or if they can develop that habit, to go out at 9 and lock their cars, remove valuables from view, close the garage, lock the front door. Mm-hmm. It just seems like almost every day when I come in and read reports that we've had another auto burglary somewhere in town. Mm-hmm. And by and large, it's the car was not locked.
Wow.
And the item was right there. So even if they put it in the trunk and kept it out of view and locked the car, thieves generally look for the easy target.
Sure.
And very rarely do we have someone break a window or force a lock to gain access, because it's ripe for the picking. There's several cars that aren't locked.
Yeah.
And
so they
doing
just open
those things attract attention, and you don't want attention
right.
if you're trying to steal something.
Right. So just those little things. Hiding it, storing it in the trunk, taking it in the house, locking the door, and then you're safe. But there's honestly no way for us to prevent that. We're relying on citizens to take extra steps to protect their own valuables, because we can't be everywhere.
The 9 o'clock routine, I like it.
9 p.m. routine
that's
every
right.
night.
Okay, that's great. That's great.
And then aside from that, sex offenses are a big thing. We see those often, which is tragic, especially with our youth.
Yeah.
Children sexually abused. And so those numbers continue to arise as well.
Hmm.
We have seen a decrease. And in fact, the numbers you can probably see in front of me, all this green means that crime's down. So this snapshot goes for the last 6 months, and then it compares it to the previous 6 months. So what's that, February to May, and then May to August.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is down. Crime's down roughly 31.6% when
no
we talk
kidding?
About... Yeah, and we've seen that trend the last 2 years we've watched that. It's about a 20 to 30% decrease every time we look at this. So even though we see certain things crop up, and even with auto burgs, as you look here, it still went down. So we had 24 in February to May, and then 21 in May to August. So three less.
Wow.
And that could be just a fluke. I mean, just because we see those occur quite often.
That's interesting.
So yeah, by and large, the crime is down, and it has hit a downward trend for several years. But there are those things that jump it up.
So just back up one step, you're talking about the sex crimes, and you mentioned specifically against children. And this is something that my awareness has really increased over the last couple months. I've been involved with Canyon Creek Services.
Sure.
And I was just completely unaware of the level of those types of crimes that are happening. So talk to us just briefly about, you know, kind of what is happening, and as a community, is there something that we can do to be more aware, to help that situation? I mean, it really blew my mind when I really started to understand what is happening in this community.
Yeah. That's difficult. I think it starts with childhood. It's an education. It's educating our children. It's setting the example and modeling what good behavior is. A lot of the offenses that we see are kids who were victimized, and then that cycle has never been broken.
Mm-hmm.
So between the young children who are being sexually molested or abused by another child that may be older, or a parent or a step-parent or a boyfriend, and then we have the sex offenses with, you know, adults.
Mm-hmm.
And a fair amount come from our college age population.
Sure, yeah.
So dating education and just... Yeah, it's a tough one to really prevent, because it does start at such a young age, and building that culture of awareness and understanding what is appropriate behavior and what is not.
Yeah, no, and I think maybe just talking about it in the community and understanding that it is here.
Yeah, and that's true.
And as community members, just understanding what that kind of looks like, what are the signs, you know, how to report, what are those steps. But like I say, I was just really, really shocked when I became aware of the actual numbers.
So. And you bring up a good point. Awareness is important. So as we talk about it, mm-hmm. and then people understand, and then if they find someone who may exhibit signs, that they're open to that, to allow that person to be free to speak, mm-hmm. and to get the help that they need.
Yeah.
And, you know, pointing out that oftentimes someone who's abused becomes an abuser.
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
getting in early to help someone who's abused get the help they need so they can break that cycle.
Right.
And not continue it forward. I feel like as a society we're becoming a lot more aware of it, so that we're intervening a little more readily to stop it.
You're right. And then that, Jesse, that comes with that awareness, right? Mm-hmm. If we know, we'll take greater steps to stop it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. That was just sort of a tangent that has, like I say, become more of an awareness issue in my world. So, okay, what else is happening in your department? What else should the community know? How can the community assist, aside from the 9 p.m. lock everything up?
Right. traffic's a big one, quite honestly, with our growth. We're seeing an increase in traffic, which means an increase in accidents.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so being obedient to traffic laws, we've heard lately, both through complaints at the police department as well as in city council, about speed concerns around town in specific areas. Mm-hmm. Fiddler's Canyon Road, Nichols Canyon Road, South Mountain Road out mm-hmm. south of town, Lay Hill. Mm-hmm. And now the school's in session. We tend to see these younger drivers who are impetuous and a little bit risky. And so they take greater risk, and that can create problems. So please be obedient to speed limit and traffic control devices, stop signs, stop lights. And understand what the rules of the road are, because that saves us a lot of time and effort. And one thing that we've done recently, my officers are very compassionate to the motoring public. So when an accident occurs, they tend to be sympathetic. But what we've seen over the years is a decrease in citations for accidents, which actually penalize the driver not at fault.
Uh-huh.
Because when the insurance companies we have found, and I maybe take a risk saying this, but it appears to us, the perception is that they do everything they can to get out of paying for a claim.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
And so that's a mandate that I've recently implemented, is that on every traffic accident, when liability is clear, you shall issue a citation. And so that may be something for the general public to understand, is the officers will cite you if you are the primary contributor to an accident.
Uh-huh.
To again, hopefully change behavior,
sure,
but also give that victim every opportunity they can have to get, you know, to make them
to get compensated,
again.
Right?
Yes,
no, that's good. That's important to know.
Yeah.
That's great.
Aside from that, we're just busy, busy. Our calls for service through dispatch increase every year. I do an end of year report every year, and those just exponentially grow because, right, wrong, or indifferent, people look at the police as the problem solvers of all society.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've taken on more and more and more that maybe we weren't ever designed to take on. We're the mediators.
Mm-hmm.
And the officers get frustrated with that. You know, they say, how much more do we have to do? We can't do everything.
Yeah.
So we're trying to strike that balance. We've talked in length about self-reporting, you know, online reporting, which we're going to look at to allow people with minor issues to report online, to free up the officer's time to deal with more pressing and emergent issues.
Okay.
Things of that nature.
And that's great, leveraging technology to reduce the workload.
Absolutely, yes. We've recently, as you probably know, and I'm so grateful to Stephanie Furnival and her staff at the CJC, who have obtained grants that has allowed us to hire victims advocates.
Oh, that's
fabulous.
They
just interviewed another one, so now we're going to have two. We've had one since December, and we've been so busy that we're adding a second through these grants, and they're right in-house. So these advocates reach out to those that that have been victimized. Mm-hmm. If it's a child, we'll still go to the CJC.
Uh-huh.
If it's a sexual assault, Canyon Creek will still handle that. But everything else, our advocates reach out, where these officers just don't have time, especially our investigators, and follow up and ask questions, you know.
That's great. I appreciate that shout out to Stephanie and the Children's Justice Center and Canyon Creek, because those are really vital community service organizations that rely on grants and, yes. and that sort of thing. And I know I'm very appreciative of the relationship that they have with law enforcement. And so that I didn't know that. That's great that they were able to secure yes. that grant. Because victim advocates, they make a difference.
They do.
You know?
Absolutely.
And then I think it, you know, it kind of frees up your people from having to do the social
right.
side, social work, you know, kind of side of things. And
it's been incredible.
Law enforcement.
And again,
just
it's breaking
months.
The cycle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gives them that one-on-one attention that they desperately need and mm-hmm. deserve, quite yeah. honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. I'm glad for that information.
So aside from just being busy, the officers are taxed, I guess I should say.
yeah.
Which you would expect. I think that's safe to say in any community with the world that we live in. We are trying to do everything that we can to hire and retain the best officers. The three new ones I just spoke of, one was a brand new officer that went through the academy himself out of Hurricane. He's
oh, wow.
a ROTC
okay.
candidate at SUU.
Okay.
So he'll be military as well. And then another young man who is in the Air Force, lived in Bakersfield, California, worked in the prisons down there. We grabbed him.
Okay.
And then another young man we stole from the sheriff's office. He worked in the jail out there, mm-hmm. Military as well. So we're getting good people to serve, you know, our community. We're very proud of them. We're very blessed. And I'm sure any agency could say this, but I sincerely mean that we have some of the best officers in the state that just care, are hardworking, are committed, and we want to keep them. We don't want the turnover to continue
yes.
as we've seen in the past, which again, many agencies are seeing that. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do all that we can to recruit the very best, to retain them, and work with our elected officials to make sure that happens.
That's
yeah.
great.
Oh. Like Jenny said with her husband, I mean, all my interactions with CCPD have been fantastic. I think there's a good culture here
yeah.
in Iron County as a whole.
Yes.
You know, there's some departments that have a little bit more of an adversarial relationship with the public, and I appreciate that you have a more cooperative and friendly atmosphere that you create, and I think, you know, that comes from the top down.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
It makes
Thank
a difference.
You. Appreciate
yeah.
you saying that.
I was showing some clients the other day, and they asked about the Cedar City Police Department. Like, how are they? You know,
yeah.
who are these people? And I said, you know, I don't know of another community whose police department is so engaged with the community. You've got the school resource officers, and not only in a professional capacity, but I know a lot of your people coach their kids' soccer teams
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
or softball teams or
yeah.
baseball teams or, you know, whatever. And that creates such a connection with the community. And I get the sense that the community is very appreciative of that relationship, too. And I hope that your people feel appreciated and supported
yeah.
by the community.
Yeah, I think they do. And they realize that it takes a partnership to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
We often talk about Sir Robert Peel. He was the father of modern policing. And he made a statement that the public are the police and the police are the public. And we say that a lot. It's pretty
mm-hmm.
redundant. But that's true. We rely on tips. We rely on people that can help us out, and we get those not only through telephone calls, but with Facebook now, we probably have at least two or three times a week a tip coming in that we act on that
wow.
actually helps us out, because people keep their eyes and ears open
mm-hmm.
and they're willing to take steps to assist us, you know, within reason, obviously, to
yeah.
ensure their safety, but we need that to be effective.
That's
so
great.
So partnership's important.
Fantastic.
Yes.
That's great. Well, we sure appreciate your time today coming
of
in.
Of course. Thank you.
Giving
for
us
me.
An update and
yes.
hopefully getting some great information out to the community.
Yes.
So keep up the great work, and we'll have you back again
okay.
for some more updates. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.
This has been Color Country Politics, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.